Our last presenter is Mike Casey. That's Mike Casey. And Mike Casey is the Associate Director for Recording Services at the Archives of Traditional Music at Indiana University. He's the co-author of the publication Sound Directions, Best Practices for Audio Preservation, and the creator of FACET, the Field Audio Collection Evaluation Tool. And Mike is also the co-chair of the ARS Technical Committee. So please join me in welcoming Mike Casey.
Very much. Thanks to Marcos and to Josh for their presentations. It strikes me that the fact that we have three people up here talking about a very similar problem with different solutions, but definitely related solutions, really speaks to the, I think, the growing maturity of our field. And I'm finding increasingly that this year, more and more tools coming out, more and more resources becoming available. The tape project that Marcos mentioned, some of their resources are excellent. They've just been coming out very recent times. So I think that the barriers to doing solid and really enduring audio preservation are starting to fall, and we're starting to have more things that we can work with, which I think is definitely bodes well for the kinds of concerns that we have and the kinds of work that we want to do. Well, I'm going to talk about FACET, the Field Audio Collection Evaluation Tool. And I'm very, very pleased and more than a little bit relieved to say that I no longer have to answer this question. Because FACET was just released a few days ago on Monday. And you can find it on the Sound Directions website. There's the URL right there. But I think you can probably just Google Sound Directions FACET and it will come up first. I'm not sure what else would come up if you Google that. So you can get to it pretty easily. Just a quick word of context. I'm at the Archives of Traditional Music at Indiana University in Bloomington. And we're an archive that was established in 1948. We're basically a world music archive, although we have important subsets of archival holdings, including much documentation of endangered and or extinct languages, and all kinds of other stuff as well. About 110,000 recordings, ranging from the 1890s to the present. So we have 7,000 wax cylinders. We have wire recordings, open reel tapes, audio cassettes, on and on and on. Really a wonderful collection in which to do the kind of research that was necessary in developing FACET. What is FACET? FACET is a software tool. It's a point-based tool, just like the two that you've just seen, that essentially takes in data, analyzes that data, and produces a risk assessment score, enabling a collection manager to build a priority list of collections in which to prioritize preservation work. FACET is, I should say, a collection level tool. That is, we're not ranking individual items, and that's one key difference. What we're doing is we're trying to amass data on a collection and enter that data and kind of crunch the numbers and come up with a score that represents that entire collection. So the approach is a little bit different. We'll talk about the process of working with collections a little bit as we go along. The FACET package includes software. It includes a formats document that explores how the different audio formats deteriorate and the characteristics that impact stability. It has 47 photographs, so there's a lot of help, you know, visual help for assessing recordings. You can look at photos of different problems and see if that's what you have in front of you. It also has a procedures manual that also on the side explores the selection process a little bit, at least as it's done at the Archives of Traditional Music. Copies of both of those documents are out on the table in the lobby there, and I'll leave them there throughout the weekend so you can page through it if you want to, but they're both available on the web as well. And finally, there's a set of worksheets that you can use when you're in the vault actually looking at recordings within a collection. This is the welcome screen. We're actually going to go through the software here in just a moment, so I'll skip over that. Just the title page to the formats document, and an example of the kinds of photographs that we have there. I don't know how this is translating back there. It may be a little dark for this setting. And there's another page from the formats document. Procedures manual. Here are some of the kinds of formats that FACET treats. The wax cylinder in the middle is notably not treated by FACET yet. That's on our list for further development, but the other formats are. So that includes aluminum discs, lacquer discs, wire recordings, open reel tape of all varieties, that is polyester-based, acetate-based, PVC, and paper, audio cassettes, DAT tapes. FACET will analyze both characteristics that impact stability, such as tape-based thickness. It's a mechanical issue, really. It's not a chemical issue, but it is a mechanical issue, and particularly when you put a tape up onto a playback machine, what it's going to do. And it will also analyze preservation problems. And here you see the classic plasticizer exudation from a lacquer disc and consequent delamination, which is following on. And this disc is starting to delaminate. FACET began in 2003 when the archives, we call the archives the ATM, when the ATM was beginning to write the first Sound Directions grant. And we needed some structured way to figure out priorities for preservation transfer. And at that time, what I started developing was, and I was developing at that point just by myself, was a worksheet, paper worksheets that we used to analyze the preservation condition of formats. I then presented that in 2005 at the pre-conference workshop here at ARSC. And again, you know, I was just giving an example of what we had done at the ATM, paper worksheets. Interesting, I thought, exploration of the formats and how they deteriorate. But it was feedback from a couple of folks, particularly Richard Hess, Steve Smolian, and a couple of others after that session that made me start to think, well, maybe this actually would be useful to other people. And maybe we should actually develop software here that would, you know, kind of take this to another level. I also, at the time, was aware of the selection document published by YAZA. And one of my goals was to make those recommendations, which are very interesting, but also fairly general, more specific, and to really quantify them. So then followed on a number of different phases of development, one of which was consultation with a number of preservation engineers, sound archivists, and others, historical research into the formats, and then a review of what little research has been done on the ways that formats degrade. We then began software development, and here's just in very general form the software. It's a standalone Java application. It does write data to a Microsoft Access file, but it's not using Access, it's just using the file format. But it makes it very accessible because you can open that file directly in Access if you want to do that. It gives you a little bit of flexibility. We then went through a beta testing stage where we tested the software at these institutions and also tested the documentation as well. And that was extremely helpful. We had a range of experience amongst these institutions, and the feedback that we received very much helped us to further develop and further generalize the tool, and I think ultimately made it much more useful for the community of people that I think will probably use FACET. When we talk about selection at the Archives of Traditional Music, we're essentially talking about assessing in two areas. One is research value, and the second is preservation condition, or the amount of risk that a collection presents to a collection manager. And our selection process starts with data collection and then analysis of the data. We then have separate processes by which we assign a research value score and by which we assign a condition and a risk score. You can see FACET over there on the right is preservation condition and risk. FACET does not provide guidance in assessing research value. It will hold a research value score and will help you manage that score in combination with the FACIT score. But for us, this is a separate process. And one of the reasons, at least in our thinking, is that assigning research value is very, not only institution specific in our experience, but also project specific. And I'll show you an example of that in just a moment. We then combine these scores to produce a collection ranking in order of priority. Things then go to the curatorial review stage where other factors are taken into account. Selection doesn't stop just with research value and preservation condition. And then final selection for preservation. Just as an example of assessing research value, here's one project that we did where we were building what we call the Cultures in Conflict Digital Archive. And so our assessment of research value was very much skewed along these lines. Does a collection represent a practice, a cultural practice, or a language that has been endangered as a result of conflict, traditions that have changed due to conflict, a cultural practice is undergoing revival? You can see this is very much one oriented towards one project. And on a 5-point scale, we assign points for these collections. And then just a word about the curatorial review stage. This is where other kinds of things are taken into account, such as how often a collection is used, whether there are access restrictions or unusual donor agreements that might prevent us from making a collection accessible, how good is the documentation on the collection. We have collections for which we have very little documentation. We don't know what's on there. Perhaps that's not a collection that should be selected high on the list for priority. And then current technical capabilities of the archive. The data gathering stage for us involves examining a bibliographic record for what information is contained there. It involves accessing information from playback. We don't do playback we do not do playback inspections as part of our normal process, but over the years, our collections have been played, some several times, and data has been gathered, so we access that data. We did a visual inspection of about 15,000 open reel tapes over a couple of year period and gathered information into an access database for these tapes. So this is another source of data for us. Within FACIT, points are either added or deducted depending on what you have. The broad categories include: each format receives a base score that represents its inherent risk for collections that are otherwise in good shape. So a lacquer disc that looks to be in great shape, no delamination, no plasticizer issues at all, will receive a higher score than an open reel tape, say a polyester-based open reel tape that appears to be in good shape, and that's because of the catastrophic way in which lacquer discs can fail. A DAT tape will also receive a pretty high format base score, and that's because of obsolescence issues related to DAT. DAT is an endangered format, very endangered, much more so than I think a lot of us realize. Points are also added for characteristics of the format that affect stability. For example, with audio cassette tapes, tape type affects stability. If you have chromium dioxide tapes, they degrade in a manner that's a little bit different than a type 1 tape, ferric oxide tape. For that matter, tape thickness that we talked about earlier, mechanical stability issues would fall into this category as well. And then format preservation problems such as sticky shed syndrome, vinegar syndrome. Points are also added for storage history problems. This is a tightly defined category. If you have a certain set of conditions present, or if you know that they have been present in the past, then points are added for storage history issues. Points are deducted if you have copies. Content which is backed up on other kinds of copies may not be, there may not be as high a risk to that content as a collection that has no backups. Did I say that backwards? Let me back up. The idea is this: if you have a copy, it may not be quite as high a priority because you have some backup of the content. You may not want to get to that collection quite assume. This is all assuming that resources for preservation are limited. I think that goes with the territory. We're not going to get to everything. Copies, points can be added or deducted for other factors as determined by the institution. So this provides some flexibility within the tool to respond to your local situation and your local context. Collections, then points are added up and collections are ranked on a preservation risk scale that starts here at 0 to 1.9, 0 being the absence of risk or the absence of problems. And these categories are defined in more detail than what I'm showing you here. But 0 to 1.9, the collection's in very good shape, little or no risk to it at the present time. We would say no compelling reason to take preservation action with this collection. 2 to 2.9, the collection's in good shape, but there's a small risk. 3 to 3.9, decent shape. In the 4 category, collection's in deteriorating or poor shape and is at moderate to severe risk. 5, and in very rare cases, well, yeah, pretty rare cases, over 5, the collection's in very poor shape or is rapidly deteriorating, has extensive damage. In our selection process, our research value scale runs from 0 to 5. Our preservation condition scale runs from 0 to 5. And that's because philosophically, we feel that research value and preservation condition should be weighted equally, that they're really two sides of the same thing. And only in exceptional circumstances will a recording rise above 5 in either of those two systems. For preservation condition, that will happen if you have, for example, a lacquer disc that's actively delaminating. That's about as bad as it can get. You're losing content. It can fail catastrophically in a very short period of time. Lacquer disc collections in that category will rank above 5. We feel that that's appropriate, that maybe they should take on a little more weight, because even if the content is rated lower, you're not going to have the chance to transfer that content in another 5 years. So maybe you want to grab this collection now, before it's too late, even if it doesn't rank all the way up to 5 in terms of intellectual value or research value. Okay, let's look at the software. Now, I'm really unsure as to how the colors will translate on this screen, but hopefully, Not to mention the legibility of the text, but hopefully that's legible from back there. Here's the welcome screen. From here, you can either search current records or create a new record. And we're going to start with a record just to explore the software a little bit. This is the administrative data screen. This is where you can track what collection you're actually working with. You can see that this is collection number 73009. This is our primary identifier. For us, it's an accession number. It's the unique number given to every collection. It's the only field and facet that's required, and that's simply because the database has to differentiate between collections. You have the option and facet of subdividing collections into parts. Collections don't always come neatly formed and homogeneous in our experience. We have some collections that may consist of both open reel tapes and cassette tapes, for example. And then even within one format, we may have open reel tapes on polyester base and open reel tapes on an acetate base. That represents two different levels of risk. And so you have the option of dividing a collection into two. That's what has happened with this example. This is a very small collection, 3 open reel tapes. 2 of them are on a polyester base, 1 is on an acetate base. We're looking at part number 1 of 2. And we've labeled this part as acetate to differentiate from the other part of the collection. Collection name, very much an optional field, just to help identify the collection that you have in front of you, if you find that useful. Shelf number, this is the unique number that's put on an individual item. And here we'll often enter a range of shelf numbers to show what individual items are included in this assessment, particularly if the collection is divided into parts. It will help us to know which items made up which part. Person who did the evaluation, the data was evaluated. Project title, We find that we do rounds of selection work based on projects. That is, we're going to write another grant. We're going to, I mean, obviously we'd like to do selection work on our entire collection, but with 110,000 items, that's just not going to happen overnight. So we do it in clumps based on project. So for example, project title might be 2008 NEH proposal. That's going to happen for us very soon. And so this will be a way of just drawing out the selection work that was done on a certain proposal a little bit later if you want to do anything with that group of records. Next step is to choose the format. In this case, we have OpenReel acetate-based tape. But you can see here a list of the other formats that Facet will treat. Generation. This is a way to track whether you're working with originals or with copies. It doesn't add or deduct points. But the issue, all the best practices documents will tell us that we should be doing preservation transfer work from originals. Practically speaking, in an archive, we find ourselves often in the position of having copies and either not knowing where the originals are or knowing that the originals are lost. This is a way to flag these kinds of issues so that you understand what you're looking at when you look at a collection assessment. And then year recorded, 1972. This will add an age score to the collection. We don't find that age is a very important factor in determining how long a collection is going to last or the amount of risk that is inherent. We find we have older items that often last longer than younger items. But it does add a very small score to the collection, and all other things being equal, it may make sense to take older things more quickly than younger things. So, while I'm here, I'll just demonstrate help and facet. You can right click on the field, and it will take you to a web resource which provides help. In this case, I right clicked on format and it took you to the procedures manual so that you can get help right from the software itself. If I wanted further help, for example, if I wanted to know more about OpenReel tape, acetate-based tapes, which is my format here, I would click the blue F icon in the procedures manual. It will take you to the formats document, which will then give you much more information on this particular format and probably some photographs as well. I'm not going to do that right now in the interest of time. Once this administrative data is taken care of, then it's time to actually start entering data based on the collection itself. Every format will give you a different characteristics and preservation problems screen. For acetate-based tape, this is what we get. Looking at the kinds of things that impact stability, what is the thickness of the tape base? And here we're using both international standards and also the US standard. In the US, we think about tape bases, we think about tape thickness in terms of the thickness of the tape base, 1 mil, 1.5 mil. The rest of the world doesn't do it that way. That's all explained in the format document. So we can, for the collection, select what the tape base thickness is. We find that off-brand tapes, that is tapes that are not from major manufacturers, have problems that the major manufacturer brands tend not to have. Often they're slit a little bit out of spec, they seem to degrade a little more rapidly. If you have an off-brand tape, and this is also, again, there are lists in the formats document that you can use to guide you here, then you can select that right here. A couple of categories that provide more nuanced assessment. If you have this information, many archives will not have it. We feel that these are very much optional categories. They're hidden under buttons, so you don't have to look at them unless you actually have this information. That is information on tracking configuration, sound field, and recording speed. What are we assessing here? We're essentially assessing aerial density. That is the amount of tape that the information, that a certain amount of data is carried on. If you have one unit of data, whatever that might be, and if your tape speed is faster, that unit of data will be spread over a larger swath of tape, right? If your tracking configuration is wider, that is full track versus quarter track, then it also will be spread over a larger swath of tape. The larger bit of tape that you have for that particular amount of data, then the less risk you have. That is, if something happens to the tape at that point, If you have the data spread over a larger bit, the chances that you can recover it are greater. And you can find this when you get acetate-based tapes that are curled, for example. Curling often happens at the edges. If you have quarter track tape, those quarter tracks are typically, or can be, at the edges of the tape. So that's a risk factor right here. The risk may be subtle, but it's there. And so to deal with aerial density concerns, if you have information on recording speed and on track configuration particularly, that can be very helpful. Information on noise reduction, which is unusual for field recordings for open reel tape. It's very common for cassette because of obsolescence issue, that is finding decoding units. And also the fact that with cassettes, noise reduction is a little more difficult to reproduce accurately because of the way cassette tapes degrade. I won't go into the specifics right now. But if you have noise reduction, Dolby B, Dolby C, for example, that's a greater risk factor. We want to account for it if we have that information. Then we get towards preservation problems. Tape pack problems. We divide these into categories, none, minor, moderate, severe. We have the same kinds of terms that you saw in the other presentations. You know, do you find spoking, windowing, cupping, curling on a tape? What we've done is we've lumped those conditions into these different categories, so you can rank the level of severity that you see within a collection. For acetate-based tape, vinegar syndrome is an issue. It's not an issue for polyester-based tape. It won't appear on that screen. Fungus. Other documented problems is a place where if you have a problem that's not included in our list, then you can document it here. So maybe you have severe oxide shedding that doesn't seem to be related to sticky shed or to soft binder syndrome or whatever any of the other conditions, but it's just something that's happening. Certain, you know, types of tape tend to shed. Scotch 111 sheds, can shed a fair bit. Maybe that's something you want to add some points to. Gives you a little bit of flexibility. You can see that there's a running summary screen on the right-hand side as well as you go through the tool. Next, we document copies that exist for the content. In this case, we had open reel tapes on a polyester base that were not preservation masters. That is, they were not done to a preservation standard. They were done, in this case, I think probably very early 1960s, just as a backup of the content. And there's some information on assessing copies in the procedures manual that can help guide you in understanding these different types of copies. But the different types of copies carry different risks themselves, don't they? And while we don't want to get too complicated in analyzing this, actually selecting, you know, the basic categories can be very helpful in understanding how much your risk is mitigated. There's also a place right here where if you have already done preservation work on the collection, you have preservation master files, you're done, you're satisfied, you can check this box, and any searching that you do, you have the option of excluding preserved collections. Because what's going to happen over time, you use Facet, you rank 500 collections, you get a grant, you do 100 of those collections. The next time you go to use Facet to pull out your next list that you want to work on, you don't want to see those 100 collections again. So this gives you a way to actually exclude those items. Storage history problems, again, as I said, a tightly defined category. If you have that, you can check this box. Other factors, this is where you can add or deduct points based on your individual situation. And there are some examples given of that. I'll give one that comes to mind that came from one of our beta testers. Oral history archive, cassette tapes, many of them have transcripts. Well, those of us who are audio archivists know that transcripts are not good enough. We want to digitize the tapes and preserve those. That's all true. But if you have collections, that two collections that are equal and one has transcripts, that content is at least backed up by the presence of transcripts. And perhaps that's at a little lower risk than the collection that's not backed up. This is the place where you can adjust the points to meet that kind of criteria that we find at individual institutions. Research value score. This is where we would enter our research value score. And it would be tracked by Facet, as you'll see in just a moment. And then a notes field to add notes. It's an open text field, so whatever notes you have on the collection can be added here. Summary screen. This provides a summary of administrative data, points assigned by facet, and then collection scores. And here you can see that the research value score is included, and there's a combined score as well. And then a statement of risk that comes from that set of categories that I showed you at the beginning. This screen can be printed directly as it is. Let's do a little searching. Here's the search screen. We'll just quickly explore search functionality. If I want to see everything that's been ranked in the collection, just hit search and it pulls up everything. You can't see the bottom of that screen, unfortunately. The bottom would tell you how many records we've actually pulled up. I think we have 303 records in the particular database that I'm accessing right now. If I want to just have fun and see what's at the very top of my list, I can do get top 10. There's the top 10 collections. We can search by collection primary identifier, which is, you know, one way in which a lot of folks would access their collections. They'll say, I want to see if this collection's been ranked. We can search by collection name, by project title, by format. So if I want to see everything that's on acetate-based OpenReel tape, I can do that search. And then I can resort if I want to. I can resort by points. That may be useful if I want to run down all the acetate-based collections and see how they look in terms of point values. Or you can resort by any of these criteria along the bar right here. Recording date. Let's say I'm interested for a grant proposal in everything before 1960, because maybe my potential grant funder is interested in early stuff. Who knows? So I can pull up everything sorted by date. That's between, I chose 1920 to 1960. Here's where you can exclude collections that have been preserved from your searches. Here's where you can include research value in your point totals if you're trying to manage a research value score along with the facet score. And here's where you can retrieve point values. Let's say I'm interested in everything that's above this 4 points and above, because those are, that, you know, 4 and 5 is really our danger categories. Search for everything that's above 3.99. Great, that's all I have, actually.